I'm Stephanie Overbuck.
I'm Mel Wymore.
And this is Pot of Gold.
If you're listening to this in 2021, your work life has probably changed drastically in the last year. But are these changes brought about by the pandemic just a blip? Or are we looking at a permanent shift in the way we conceive of our working lives?
In this episode, we are speaking with Paul Millard, who several years ago left behind his corporate 9-to-5 to pursue life on the road as a solopreneur. He's a writer, blogger, and host of his own podcast, Reimagine Work, where he questions the role of work in our lives.
We asked Paul where he sees the future of working going, and together imagine a world where we're all free to carve out our own paths in life. Take a listen.
Yeah, so I'm Paul Millard, and living in Puerto Escondido now in Mexico. I've been living and working as a digital nomad for almost 3 years now. I left the corporate world in 2017 after working in strategy consulting and big corporations for about 10 years and have essentially set out on a path trying to work in many different ways. So kind of like making sense of the future of work while also writing about it and connecting with others and sense making as I go. And I think what I try to do is approach that humbly instead of trying to create like a thought leader talking point positioning of myself, but instead just live life, see where it takes me, embrace the unknown, and try to be honest about that and honest about what I don't know as well.
Well, so when you say, let's get specific about what differences or how you see yourself as different from, for example, the average American expecting a career or some kind of livelihood through consistent work. What's your experience and how is it different?
Well, I think I grew up not really questioning anything. I was pretty good at school. So when you're good at school, nobody really is ever nudging you or pushing you to do things differently or think about things in a different way. So, I mean, through high school and college, I just assumed like, okay, I'm going to go to college and then I'm going to try and get a good job and never really questioned that. Did that for a while. I think a few years into working, I kind of knew I was a little different. I was really hungry to learn new things and move around to different jobs. Whereas adults started giving me advice like you should always kind of like optimize around salary. You shouldn't leave a job too early. You need to put in your time. You need to suffer. You need to struggle. And I think the journey for me really started with grappling with the disconnect between what I was feeling and those assumptions. Like those assumptions didn't fully stack up for me. And I think I've tried to explore those in my writing and research while also just trying to figure out, okay, if that isn't my assumption, what is my assumption? And that's where I come to looking at life through the lens of, okay, what am I trying to achieve here? What kind of life am I trying to build? And where does that come from? And how do I do that?
So what is that? What is your lens? What is your assumption?
Yeah, so my assumption is that work is not the prime aim of life, which is seems acceptable. Most people agree with that on a surface level, but once you start pushing, most people don't agree with that. So what I mean is that I want to orient around things that are non-work. So reading, writing, creating things I want to create, being able to volunteer and participate in organizations or paid work sometimes in ways that align with the things I'm excited about. Also being able to quit work for long stretches of time and either to travel when we have kids, spend time with them, travel with them, homeschool maybe, do things like that. And so that's probably like the meta level. And then I think at the more practical level, it's most people operate with the default script of like, okay, a successful person has a job, a house, these things, invest in education, those things. And I probably back up and start from first principles and say, like, what are we trying to achieve here, right? with the big house, what are we trying to achieve? I think people want a big house for a variety of reasons. Status, they want a place to entertain people, they want a place to host people, they want their kids to feel safe. And if those are the things that I'm trying to achieve, how can I achieve those in different ways? And that's kind of how I approach everything, probably just like breaking it down to first principles and then trying to figure out different ways or more creative ways.
So how do you pay for travel? I mean, how do you integrate this, the context of, you know, basically having to pay for things in order to get from here to there, metaphorically and really, and how does that work with your setup? Do you do bartering, or how do you live? How do you thrive?
So I'm doing consulting work. I run an online course. I do paid coaching. I do a bunch of stuff, but like my goal is not to match my income of my previous life. So this year is probably the most I'll make in the fourth year of working on my own. And I'm still, this year I'll probably make about $70,000. And I share that because a lot of people don't talk about this. They only talk about like, oh, you can be rich or you can work remotely. But the previous 2 years, I think I made like $35,000 and $25,000. And this is the real thing that people don't realize, is you don't need to spend a lot when you travel. Travel isn't expensive. Vacations are expensive. A vacation is expensive because you don't want anything to go wrong, so you pay a lot more. But I'm paying about $600 a month for rent down here. Insurance, like in the US, is crazy expensive, but abroad, if you have to go to a hospital, you're not going to go bankrupt and there's no insurance to deal with. You just pay directly. Food's a lot cheaper. And that's mostly been the case in all the places I've been: Spain, Indonesia, Taiwan, Mexico. It's really much, much cheaper for me to live abroad than it is in the US or other rich countries like Australia or UK.
So when you talk a lot about, you know, the achievements, big house, safety, you're basically questioning the American dream. And for a lot of people, that concept still exists, you know, and this is actually why they're still immigrating to the US and trying to find that freedom and find this financial freedom as well. So do you get a lot of shocked, reactions of people when they hear about your lifestyle you chose?
A little bit. I think you're spot on too. And if you look at the income data, especially for the US, there's more high income people than ever before. So the income pyramid is skewed. We actually have less middle income people, more higher income people, and a lot more low income people too. So it's a really messed up future of work paradigm, like huge problems with that. But you are right, like the opportunities in these countries is still enormous. And like, there's been a tech revolution. So if you're working in tech, it's a better time than ever to work in the US. I think two things on the pushback. One is I'm not writing for those people. if you want information on the default American dream, like that is the default story. You don't need somebody to help you think differently. It's just right there for the taking. And, I love that people can make that work. That's not my path. I write for the weirdos. I write for the people that want to question things. I write for the people that want to chase their curiosity for years. That's who I write for. And I think the thing I've realized is that we kind of make some logical leaps with how we think about success and the meaning it gives us in our lives. So I call this the accidental meaning hypothesis. I think there was essentially a period from 1950 to probably the end of the 90s in which pursuing a full-time job led you to pretty easily afford a solid house and be part of communities that were very meaningful to be part of. However, the labor economy has transformed such that you now have to move to a high-priced city to do a similar path. You're moving away from your family. You're more disconnected from community. Religion has fallen off. Community associations have fallen off. So you're kind of making your own meaning. And this is the thing I think applies to almost everyone. And I talk to a lot of people who are like, this default path works for me. Great. And I'm like, awesome. Like, I love that those opportunities are great. And I think the full-time job is like a tremendous innovation. The problem is like there's this shadow side of not actually getting the meaning you were promised, right? And this is where people end up really confused. And people tend to look at people like me and think, okay, the solution is to quit my job and follow a different path. And I actually push back pretty aggressively on that and say, actually, like, what are you trying to solve for here? Going back to the same thing around the first principle thinking and saying, like, are you trying to solve for meaning? Because it may actually be harder to go out on your own and carve your own path.
I listened to your podcast. I think it's called Reimagine Work, Paul, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I noticed that a lot of podcasts who are in the space of rethinking, reimagining work are actually by white males. And there was, out of 10, there was only one woman talking about that subject. Why do you think that is?
I don't know. What, do you have any hypotheses?
No, I was just surprised. I was like, maybe it's because maybe this is just an assumption now, right? Maybe you get fed up easier or earlier and just have the courage to leave, and women may be happier to stay in their jobs. I have no idea. Very new thought.
Yeah, I think a lot of other, I don't follow a lot of the other ones. I think a lot of the threads on reimagining work are pretty shallow to me. They're talking about like, oh, we need to increase autonomy and all these buzzwords. I'm more interested in like the philosophical layer, which is like, what is the point of life here? And what are our roles and identities through work? This is a really interesting one for me, because when you look at, McKinsey put out a report in 2015, I think, on women in the workplace. And there was this chart, I can send you the link later, that showed, it's like, I don't know, 40-something% of women did not aspire to be a top executive. But it also showed like 30-something% of men didn't want to be a top executive. And this is a huge thing that's not talked about, is that most humans don't want to be senior executives. And most of the work conversation is around the idea that people should be senior executives. I'd imagine men might get frustrated with it more because a lot of men have stepped into roles as active caretakers. And this is awesome. Like, this is something I aspire to. But it's still not socially acceptable. Like, when people talk to me and my wife, they ask me what I'm going to do for work. And it's like, well, why not Angie, right?
Exactly.
So I think it's still very acceptable for women to take time off to raise kids. I think women probably on average want to do that more than men. But like, I want to speak for the men that want to be good fathers and don't want to center their life around work too.
And have the right to actually take off work for the kids.
Yeah, I mean, I think men are still kind of looked down upon when they do that. And it's just our own narratives, right? I very much internalized the idea that like money meant a good person when I was younger. I never really saw a gender thing around that, mostly because like the ideas of having kids was kind of absent from modern American culture, around people our age. But, you can see looking back now that like, this is deeply ingrained. That's like, oh, you have to earn money and do all these things.
I'm interested in this concept. I've always wondered why we actually distinguish the notion of work. It feels to me like that evolved out of the notion that you have to go somewhere to get paid for doing something. Whereas, you know, if we see ourselves in life trying to survive, there's activities we do that exchange with other people, and then there's activities we do that involve play. But the actual kind of work-life distinction seems to me like almost artificial. if we all had the kind of freedom that you are talking about and exercising. And do you see a world where just the very concept of work kind of fades away?
Yeah, I mean, this is something I write about. This is a confusing topic because until the Protestant Reformation, like, work as the central aim of life was not a thing. So this is only like 500 years old. And then not until the 1940s, 50s was knowledge work and the idea of a career path a thing. So the only sure thing is that work will change again. I think the difference is that we've totally lost the script in terms of like why we're doing what we're doing. Nobody can ever articulate to me like why they're working in a corporate job other than to like pay for stuff. And that materialist view of life and as like, well, you need money to earn a living it's a rather new conception of what the whole point of all this is. Right. And then you have people arguing that, well, we should consider the child raising as work. Right. And maybe we should pay for that. But I think this falls into the same trap of like trying to turn everything into work. And I mean, there's been a lot better stuff written about this. Andre Gorz is a social philosopher, and he wrote about basically our wage-based reality. And he was saying what we think of as work is basically just something, only something that has a certain amount of credentials and a title that can be paid for. But in reality, we're basically just undermining all the things that are worthwhile to do that are hard to quantify and turn into jobs. Like raising kids, like taking care of the elderly, like contributing to our community. Like, consider what people say now when the woman in a two-parent household stays home. They say, oh, wow, you're going to stay home, right? So the default script is that now everyone should work. That's kind of crazy. It's like you're choosing to stay home. There's so much like baked in that in so many directions, right? One is like, why would somebody never say that to a man? Two is, why is the default assuming that they aren't working if they aren't going to a job that they're paid for? But yeah, it's all a little, it fascinates me. I don't really have an answer for where it's headed or like how this evolves, but for me, it's like, how do we become more aware of this such that we might be able to dream up new possibilities?
You know, it's interesting. You said that's true for women. Oh, you're going to stay at home. But I actually think the pervasiveness of defining ourselves around work is way bigger in the United States anyway. If you first meet someone, the very first question isn't, you know, what's your favorite ice cream or
what do you do?
Yeah, it's what do you do? And that's a very loaded question. It's not what do you like or who do you consort with or it's what do you do to earn a living that someone else is paying you for? And it's a very specific question. And if you don't come back with either a title or something.
I like chocolate.
Then you kind of get dismissed in many contexts, you know, if you're not coming with some credible source of income.
Well, this is, this goes back to, I mean, I've been reading The Organization Man written by William White in the 1950s, and he writes about this huge shift in the consciousness of like what a young person should be doing, in that they're moving away from their families for the first time and identifying with an organization, with a career, and with their own like individuality. This is all like very new, and we don't really know if this is the best way to organize a society. It's just what's emerged. And what he said is like, essentially, people are going from what family are you part of, or what town are you part of, or what community you're part of, what church are you part of, to what do, right? And we don't even remember that there used to be a different way anymore.
But also there was a genius in that by creating a corporate culture that
companies know what they're doing. They've only gotten better at it.
Exactly.
Like I was reading some of the headlines of the jobs from this era, and let me just pull some up now. So these are some of the headlines in the Journal of College Placement advertising jobs, and they're all like so awkward. A gateway to lifetime security. A wise choice today puts you ahead of your future. ground floor opportunities in transistors.
Oh, you could make a book out of this. It's fantastic.
Yeah, the a world of expanding opportunity. Opportunity unlimited, careers unlimited. It's like, it's so awkward reading that now, but then you realize companies are basically doing the same thing, right? But they're couching it in much more creative and strategic language of the day.
But it's so attractive if you're looking, if you're in a rural community, for example, with limited options.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So there, it seems like there's been a period of kind of corporatocracy or corporatization of the workplace, creation of a workplace. And maybe it's coming to the end of its curve, so to speak. You know, it's like it was almost necessary for the kind of increase in standard of living that you see worldwide. And now it seems to kind of have played out, or is at least in developed countries playing itself out.
Yeah, that's what I think. I mean, if you look at the growth rates across the world, we had 3-5% growth until the end of the 90s, and that has stagnated now to 1-2.5%. And the difference in that is enormous in terms of societal implications, opportunities, incomes, how people organize themselves. But we're still stuck with the myths of that like unprecedented 50-year period of growth, and all the work myths and all the ideas of how to organize a society. And I think part of my hesitance of going too bold in any of the future of work stuff, like I just don't do like the thought leader thing or try to work with big organizations, because I think the future in the short term is pretty ugly. It looks like there's going to be enormous opportunity for a certain amount type of person that's very self-motivated, digitally savvy, and is comfortable creating on their own. And then for the most part, middle class, middle skill jobs are disappearing. That's been happening for like 30 years. David Autor from MIT has outlined that pretty persuasively. And then low skill jobs are going to increase, and they're going to be kind of the like operations layer of these more technocratic societies. And it's not pretty. And there's no like, there doesn't appear to be any political hope right now. I mean, both like politics seems to be more around trying to point out how bad other people are rather than dreaming possible futures.
Yeah, no, I it's a very interesting perspective, and I wonder with the advent of children, how big of a factor that becomes. Because in the 50s, I think that was post-war, this baby boom happens. And I think the drive for people to just have comfort, stability, and a steady income was so powerful, so they could create a home for their kids. And, you know, I do think that's a huge factor of when you have a child, you want that stability, and you're willing to sacrifice to give that child a stable home.
I think things have changed, right? Nobody would go back to the 50s because like women had shitty jobs. it was crappy for women. Yeah. That idea was built on a very narrow slice of people who did work in these big companies and had stay-at-home wives and were living in communities where everyone else was doing the same thing.
Yeah.
The problem is if you go do that now, everyone's partner is working now, and nobody's involved in the community. Everybody has daycare. So you're kind of disconnected, and like people are just like, what the hell is the point of all this?
But I could see it where you have everyone working 20 hours a week. You know,
I'm on board, but I just haven't found that community yet.
But I could see, you know, like if we've spoken to so many people about universal basic income and different ways to structure things so that, you know, you can be connected with your family and your community and work. And it doesn't have to be gender specific, you know, and, you know, I think your prediction that there's going to be a rough time is true. There's a big transition, but I also think we're working too much, you know.
Yeah, I grew up in a large extended family, and basically everyone takes care of everyone, right? So I looked at all my aunts and uncles or even people in my community as like people that could like discipline me and raise me and I could get wisdom from. That's awesome, but it's really hard to recreate. And I think I kind of just want to recreate that. And what I'm trying to do is basically live working 20 to 30 hours a week and do it long enough such that like one, I can get used to just having less. And two, find other people who are on board with that.
How do you think a worldwide pandemic might change people's thinking about work? Do you think we'll see a sea change just because all of a sudden people are realizing they can do a lot just from a laptop and a chair?
Yeah, I don't know. I think time will tell. What I can tell you is that I had probably a 5 to 10x rate in terms of people reaching out to me. It seemed my writing was like resonating with what people were feeling during the pandemic. They were looking around and being like, wait, what the heck am I doing? I just work on a computer 50 hours a day. And now that I'm doing it at home and my wife is over there and my child is over there, this seems even more ridiculous. Like I'm working so I can spend time with them. Yeah, I'm right here and I can't spend time with them. Although most people were basically just working less and spending more time with their families or trying to hack together an education for their kids who were doing Zoom classes and people learning how to cook. And I think people's imaginations have been spurred. I've noticed among like my age group, which is like mid-30s millennials, it's almost been like a, holy shit, like our whole approach to life was kind of ridiculous. We were delaying all these things that are important for no reason other than work. Like, let's have a baby. Let's move where we want to move. Let's go live closer to family. Let's go travel if we actually want to do this. So I've seen a lot of people make some pretty bold decisions this year, but I don't know. I mean, I think... we're basically seeing the whole technology industry eat up all the growth in the last 9 months. That's the only reason the economies are still growing, especially in the US. It's going to be pretty dire. Like everyone can't become a tech knowledge worker working from home. Like that's just not the skill set of our labor economy right now. So I don't know. Short term, not very optimistic. Our politicians seem utterly clueless or just don't even seem to care about labor and work. So I don't know. We'll see.
Is there anything we haven't asked you, what you thought like would be really good to ask you?
I don't know. I thought it was a good conversation. I think you're probably hearing a lot of like confusion in my voice. I think I'm very much in this like liminal space with the world where I don't really know what the future looks like. I see some strands of possibilities of heading in new directions, but I also see a lot of concerning things and a lot of like extension of the way things were. And I don't know that I guess that's my, final summation. And I think the thing that drives me is trying to find these things out through my writing, through my conversations with people. And I just encourage people to reach out and like let me know what they think and keep this conversation going.
Yeah, that's an important conversation for sure. And I hope people do stick with new opportunities or at least new considerations out of this time. because it's I think it's the way we're going to move forward. We don't know what it's going to look like, but we know it's going to be different.
So I love listening to Paul and the way he pursues his life and his dream and his very authentic way of being and living and making these choices, and bold choices too, you know, it's admirable. And especially how he values his time and then he walks his talk.
Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, the only common unit we all have is time. And if we let that time get soaked up by our conventions around work and having our identity tied up in our work, rather than, well, how do we really want to spend our time? It's a huge paradigm shift. But it's interesting because it is all tied up in economics and the way the economic system is designed for us to plug in order to make a living. And he's separated those two things, right?
Yeah.
You know, what you do with your time and how you make a living are completely separate issues, separate worlds.
Yeah, it's almost talking to someone who has like a limited amount of time left because he knows he dies, you know, and I want to make the most out of my time. Or he knows what to do, what, you know, maybe not what he wants to do. I think he figures it out on his way, but he knows where his value is. And there is no way of going back to the 9-to-5 job. Like, that's right. not 10 horses could basically bring him back into the US, nor doing a corporate job. So, but
yes. Not to judge that, because I think, you know, those 9-to-5 jobs that people have also provide value. They provide community for a lot of people, sense of belonging, sense of connectedness. And really, work does do both of these things. Like, it offers us opportunities to connect to other people, and it offers us opportunities to identify ourselves. And it's that kind of dialectic between how we connect and how we identify ourselves that makes it interesting. Like, I like the choices. And he's opening a new world of choices for people.
No, I mean, I didn't want to judge anyone who made the choice of having a 9-to-5 job. But what I think Paul really rightly points out, that within our modern society, we are almost educated to not think about that choice.
Yeah. That's true. I think that's true.
And then to go out and actually make that choice to live differently is inspiring.
Yep.
And now, you know, that we've had a pandemic for almost a year now, which a lot of people had to shift. They had to go into home office. They had to experience, and, you know, there was good and bad. You know, I think whatever I like listen around in my own friends, circles, and experiences, tough situations where it was all too much with kids and wives around all the time, you know, family around all the time. But then I think it was also at the same time liberating. You were not bound going into a job every day.
Yeah.
And so what that means for our commute, for our real estate when it comes to work, the way we actually work, and what do you say? Yes, you have an identity at work for sure. It has been shifted now. We'll see how it all collaborates, you know, where we end up.
Well, it certainly could provide for a lot of affordable housing if we clear out all that office space and turn it into actual living space, you know? I mean, I think corporations are going to realize very quickly they're spending a lot of money on bricks and mortar that they don't need anymore. And that's a huge shift in its own right.
It's an expensive coffee break.
Yeah. Okay, and this is our 50th episode. Woo-hoo!
This is our 50th episode, so almost a year. We made it. We are still together.
Yeah, still chasing that pot of gold.
On the road from wasteland to wonderland.
We're an independent, listener-supported podcast.
Thanks to our producer, Riley Paul.
Support us by rating this episode and sharing with all your friends.
And to learn more, join us at potofgold.world.
I'm Stephanie Overbach.
And I'm Mel Wymore. Thanks for listening.